We've had a lot of readings this morning. We've heard from Devarim 34:1-12, Bereshit 1:1-13, Joshua 1:1-18, Matthew 28:16-20, and Yochanan 5:21-29. We've heard the last verses of Devarim and the first verses of Bereshit, and that can only mean one thing. Our high holidays, sorry. It's been 22 days, 22 eventful, amazing days. So much has happened, so much has changed. Sanctuary has changed. Everyone is sitting more together, snugly today, just to give us space to dance. You have this feeling of leaves in the air in the sanctuary. It was very obvious when we came in on Wednesday for prayer. It's like, leaves. But other things have changed as well. Do you remember the joy we had at Yom Teruah? I remember not at all being in the mood for another high holiday season. And I know a lot of you were much more holy than me, and you were already ready, and you were rearing to go. You've been ready for weeks. You just couldn't wait. But my mind was just so occupied with everything else that was going on in my life. And I was actually surprised. I felt ambushed by the joy of the day, just taking me out of the normal and putting me into the festival feeling. You know, the worship that day was out of the world. We always have great worship, but don't you think that what we had on Yom Teruah, that is something else? And then we had Yom Kippur, which was another experience to remember. I always find that there is this sense of camaraderie when we all come together, stand together, dressed in white, encouraging each other to the fast, and everyone is humble, and everyone is hungry, and thirsty, and tired, and it's just no pretense, we're just existing together. Some of us this year going out in the park and enjoying a little bit of the lovely sun we had. Some of us just sitting in the sanctuary and chatting. And then in the midst of it, there was God. And He really was there. I had this tangible feeling of God's presence. And I remember not wanting to end it. I actually couldn't make myself to finish the fasting the evening. I continued a little bit because I just needed a few more hours of that time with the Lord before normality came crushing in again. And then we had Sukkot. You probably remember that. That was just 1 week ago and yesterday. I actually surprised myself with shedding a couple of tears of joy in the back there. The rabbi's teaching was spot on, and the food we've had this whole season, it's been a reason to rejoice in itself. It's just been amazing. And actually on Sukkot, we had a lot, but I saw people even picking up the crumbs from the table and eating because it was so good. And now we're at the eighth day. Shemini Atzeret. What can I say about Shemini Atzeret? What is this festival about? It's not a silly question. It's actually a very good question to ask. Moshe, kindly, left us with very few instructions saying what we should do, why we should do it, how we should do it. We know it's the conclusion of the high holidays. Literally, it means the concluding assembly celebration at the eighth day, counting from Sukkot. We know it's a Shabbat. We know we're supposed to bring a sacrifice, but more than that, we don't really have any more information. Now, even Yom Teruah, which by itself comes with very few instructions, at least it has the shofar. Yom Kippur has the atonement procedure, and Sukkot's got the tabernacles, but Shemini Atzeret doesn't have any of those things. And if you're feeling a little bit confused about this day, you're in good company. Now, even the great Torah teachers of old, they haven't had much to say about this day. It's a bit of a mystery. How do we traditionally celebrate it? Like a tag on to Sukkot, like a bonus day of celebration. Yet everyone agrees, today is not Sukkot. No one says it is, everyone knows Sukkot is 7 days, but yet we kind of spend some more time in the Sukkah because we don't really know what else to do. Well, I'm not only here to surprise you and confuse you today. I am hopefully here to bring you some answers. There is one thread of thinking that offers a lot more satisfactory explanation to this day than what you can find in most Jewish literature. And this perspective, it can only be understood if we, instead of walking in circles around the text itself and the commandment itself, take a step back and ask ourselves, what is it actually that we are concluding with this celebration? And yes, we're concluding the high holidays, we're concluding a lot of food and a lot of parties, but what's the significance of these days? If we put them all together and look at what they represent as a whole, look at the journey that they together tell us about, the journey of Israel, the journey of each and every one of us. If we do that, something quite profound and beautiful appears. So let's do that. Let's tie this whole thing together to figure out how does it end. It all started with God calling us into action by the sound of the trumpet, by the shofar. And Rabbi preached to us on Yom Teruah comparing the shofar with that of an alarm clock. And I really like that comparison, because you don't always like the sound of your alarm clock. The sound of my alarm clock is very annoying. But that's not really the point of the shofar, to make us a good, nice sound that we can listen to and enjoy. It's designed to warn us, to wake us up, call us into action. And we're told we need to do something, whether it's getting out of bed in the morning or taking the chicken out of oven, or when it comes to God, something much more serious. And there have been many wake-up calls in the history of Israel. If you think about it, it was the work description of the prophets to warn and to redirect our people. But just like with an alarm clock, we often pressed snooze, didn't we? Snooze button. And you can often press the snooze button a couple of times. But at some point, you better do something, because it will be too late. And God, although I'm sure he doesn't enjoy it, have had to shake us quiet hard sometimes to make us take notice. I'm thinking about three major wake-up calls in the history of Israel. The destruction of the temple the first time, and the Babylonian exile. And then the destruction of the temple the second time, and are scattering in diaspora. These were events that didn't leave anyone untouched. Events that shook the Jewish soul just so deeply it couldn't go unnoticed. And the thing is, we knew exactly what they meant, didn't we? Events like this happen because of our unfaithfulness, our unrighteousness. It couldn't be any clearer for us. God is saying, enough, wake up, you need to change your ways before it is too late. And the third way that Paul I'm thinking about is the birth of our Messiah. He preached repentance. He fulfilled messianic prophecies in front of our eyes. He made many miracles. And a lot of people at that point turned to God. They turned in masses and had their lives transformed. But some people pressed the snooze button, went back to bed, and missed their opportunity. And there are the shofar blasts too, smaller in magnitude, more like a nudge directed towards a single individual. I've had them in my life. I'm sure each and every one of you have had them in your lives. God doesn't leave anyone out. He doesn't forget anyone. Jew or Gentile, He nudges everyone. For an example, I have this memory. It's quite a strong memory from my childhood of a comedy TV series that I used to watch. And I was completely fascinated with the team tune, the music in the beginning of each episode. And I had no idea why. It's just every time I heard it, I was enchanted. I didn't realize why until something like 15 years later when I heard it again. And I realized this jingle, it wasn't just made up for this series. It was a messianic worship song about God's faithfulness and God's wisdom, but I had no idea back then. I didn't recognize it. In fact, I ignored many little nudges like that throughout my life until, of course, one day I didn't. And I decided to investigate, and I carefully walked up to that door to see who was knocking. There was only one problem, right? Imagine that God is standing at the door, knocking, and there's an angel standing next to him, blowing the shofar, saying, "Hearken, let me in, take heed." And we want to invite them in. We're done shutting God out. We now want to hear what He's saying. But we and God are like matter and antimatter. Now, God is good. God is life, God is pure and holy, and we, if we have sinned, perhaps, sometime in our lives, then we are carrying death and darkness and evil in us. Should we invite God into our house, into our presence, then that good and evil would collide and explode, and we would fall dead on the floor. This is why God invited the temple, to separate us humans from His direct presence. It wasn't ideal, and I really believe God was so sad when He had to do it, but it was necessary. And even at the temple, there's only one person who could go into the Holy of Holies, and only once per year, and only after a lot of preparation, washing, sacrificing. The high priest, only at Yom Kippur. And stories has it that some years the high priest wouldn't even return from his mission. He would have been struck dead by the holiness of God. And we don't know if that's true, it's just a story, but we know that our forefathers trembled at this notion of meeting God face to face, and they were surprised to see when they actually survived, like Jacob and Moshe. Now, the high priest risked a lot to go in on Yom Kippur, but he did it for a good reason. He did it so that God could continue living at some level in our presence to cleanse us, the people of Israel, to make atonement. And to one point, it works, right? We remain clean for 1 year so that God can live in that building in Jerusalem. And there's a similar logic for anyone who wants to open that door and let God in. Not just to live in the midst of our nations, in reality probably miles and miles away from us, the people, but actually live more intimately inside of us. There's purification needed, but an even more thorough one. There's a Yom Kippur needed for the heart. The yearly atonement for Israel comes through the blood of goats. The everlasting atonement for our hearts comes through the blood of the Messiah. And Rabbi preached on this on Yom Kippur quite technically and in much detail, and I don't want to go into the details now. You can go and listen back if you want to hear it again. I just want to say that I know it's true, because I remember the day of atonement in my life after I decided to answer that shofar blast. I'm sure a lot of you remember your Yom Kippur of the heart as well. But atonement is not the end goal, is it? We've heard God's voice, we have accepted it, and now we're living with Him. And you could think that that would be the end of the story. For a lot of people, it is the end of the story. We're forgiven, we have our God. What else is there to ask for? But if you stop turning the pages of the book here, if you put down your tent pegs and finish your journey, then you will miss out on Sukkot. And you really don't want to miss out on Sukkot. Now, Yom Teruah and Yom Kippur, they're very serious days. They're good, but they're serious. Sukkot is something completely different. It's about rejoicing. It's fun. It's uncomplicated. It's playful. It's really something that you do want in your life. At the festival itself, we are commanded to rejoice with the fruits of the land and the green leaves. And I want to point out to you that God at this point assumes that we have fruits on our trees, that we have green leaves to rejoice with. The festival of Sukkot itself assumes that we had rain. It assumes that the land is healthy. It assumes that we have been blessed by God. In other words, Sukkot assumes that we, Israel, have lived such a life that God would bless us, a righteous, holy life. Sukkot is the natural continuation of the story of a people who have heard God's call and been seeking atonement. Only then, actually, can we really experience Sukkot the way it's supposed to be. Only then can we rejoice in the way that we are supposed to do with all these blessings that God assumes that we really should have at this point. And I wonder if not our rejoicing with the fruits and the greens cannot simultaneously be interpreted as a rejoicing with our spiritual fruits that God has brought forth in us. You know, living a righteous life with God, it both brings blessings on the land, plentiful harvest, but it also brings spiritual fruits, spiritual produce. And we know about it: peace, love, patience, wisdom, joy. Basically, God is making us flourish like He makes the land flourish. And it brings a harvest of souls. Sukkot is a harvest festival. It occurs at the time of the second harvest, the autumn harvest in Israel. But it's also traditionally connected with a harvest of souls. A second harvest. If the first harvest of souls is that of the people of Israel, then the second harvest is that of the nations. We think this because, like Rabbi said last week, we have the prophecy of Zechariah, when he describes how the survivors of the nations who used to come and fight us, they now will go up to Jerusalem during Sukkot, celebrate the festival and worship God and His Messiah, the King. We're now talking about the end of times, at the time when Messiah will finally rule in Jerusalem. Some people say that the 70 sacrifices and the 70 days of Sukkot, that symbolizes completion. And this really is completion. Like Rabbi was hinting earlier today, this is the very goal that we've been working towards, that God's been working towards, and that we, everyone who serves God, has been working towards. The whole world as one worshipping God, ruled by his Messiah as the Jewish universal message of Sukkot, we're finally there. Which leads us to the final chapter of our journey. What comes after completion? What comes after the 7 times 7? What comes on the 8th day? It must be something then outside of time itself, outside of life as we know it. This is the time when the dead will rise, the time when death will be no more. 1 Corinthians is trying to describe it, and it says that we will all be changed. In the blink of an eye, we'll be different. Will be clothed in imperishability and immortality. It's not easy to describe the Olam Haba, the world to come. Now, when we were sitting around, some of us, at Yom Kippur this year, we were talking about it, the world to come compared to the world as we know it. And I said that this world is like going to work. Let's be honest, living is a constant struggle. It's rarely easy, we rarely see it end up the way we wanted it to be. It's just hard, we have to see it as a job. I think that helps in your mind. It's a job, we have a mission, we have a task, everyone has a slightly different assignment, but everyone working towards the same goal. And struggle is just what we should expect. The world to come, it will be when you pack up your work after a long day and you go home and you go to your happy place where you can rest, where you can do all those things that you've been yearning to do all working week but not been able to do. This life may seem long, but the happy place is much longer. It's eternal. And this is how we can see Shemini Atzeret, the 8th day, as the end of a great journey. We were called, we answered by repentance. It cleansed us so that we could be who we were made to be. We were blessed, we rejoiced, and others saw it, and they joined us. And together we saw the world being renewed. If you look at it this way, the 8th day makes perfect sense. It's needed for completion. It's not a tag on to Sukkot. It's not a bonus day of celebration. It is in itself the greatest reason that we have to rejoice. Perhaps we are struggling to know how to observe it because its perfection is just too foreign to us. Perhaps God didn't know how to describe it to us in words, how to celebrate this day, how to describe this kind of joy, this kind of peace of the end. And I think in a way it is okay to struggle knowing exactly what we're supposed to do and how to live this amazing fullness in our lives that we have not even been close to experiencing ourselves ever yet. As long as we are aware that it's coming, and that for those who belong to God, there is nothing greater, and there is no greater reason for us to celebrate. This isn't the last day. This is the first day of an amazing eternity. Shabbat shalom, everyone.